Melinda Leslie has been public with her abduction experience, her own one, for 20 years, researched covert ops involvement in abductions for 17 years, and has interviewed more than 50 abductees with this involvement. Now, for about 9 years, Melinda was the director of a UFO lecture series hosting the most prominent names in ufology. In addition to her abduction work, she has been a paranormal researcher for a number of years and a founding member of the Orange County Paranormal Researchers. That's a group that has conducted formal investigations for 9 years. We're going to talk about her work right now with abductees. Melinda Leslie, back on Coast to Coast. Hello, Melinda.
Hi, George.
Good to have you back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me back.
Interesting days. Fast year, by the way, isn't it?
It felt like I was just on when I was on with Joe Montaldo, and I realized it was September, so it's almost a year. Oh, my goodness.
You know what? You're right. How time flies.
God, it was so fast.
You've been doing a lot of work in this area lately.
Yes, I have.
Tell me about the research.
Well, as you said, I've been doing work with abductees. These are extraterrestrial abductees who then have covert involvement in their lives. They'll have harassment, surveillance. They'll be re-abducted by covert agencies and interrogated about their procedures. And I keep getting more cases and more evidence, and it just keeps moving forward.
And when you say covert agencies, Melinda, you're talking about terrestrial-based, right?
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely talking about human covert ops, intelligence, and military groups. Often military uniforms are seen. Sometimes it's lab environments with guys in lab coats. And, you know, I can't put my finger on exactly who is behind it. I've always said it's the same, and, you know, some people may not like me using this term, but I call it the cabal, the same cabal that's managing ET information and technology.
How do they know that these people have been abducted?
Well, there could be a couple of ways. In my research, I've come across evidence and information suggesting that they have much better knowledge. For instance, you know, the guys managing the whole ET contact and information, that they monitor craft coming and going much better than we've ever given them credit, as an example. I think we have evidence of this with the space shuttle missions and the amount of footage that has come out from space shuttle missions and transmissions and everything else. And also, I once met a gentleman by the name of Ron Regere. I believe he may have been on the program.
Mm-hmm.
And he was involved in the development of the DSP's spy satellite. And he said the spy satellite happened to catch what they called fast walkers on a usual basis. Now, this spy satellite was not designed for doing that. It just happened to get these, what he said were objects under intelligent control coming in from deep space, coming in very, very fast, again, under intelligent control, and showing up in our atmosphere. And he said it would track these from time to time. Well, it's then easy to extrapolate that if they have satellites that just happen to be tracking them, what do you bet they have satellites that are designed specifically to track them?
Probably.
And exactly. So I'm thinking, you know, given all this, if they're actually tracking these better than we've given them credit, then they may know, for instance, that sightings are continually happening in a particular area or that they followed craft to particular neighborhoods. They may then decide to monitor the phones or mail or emails in that area and see if anybody is communicating about experiences. Also, abductions are known to happen in family lines. It seems to be a whole genetic heritage that's followed with abductees, that if you're an abductee, probably your parents were. If you're an abductee and you have children, probably your children are also being abducted. This is so prevalent and so common that I think that this is also followed in family lines. So if you're having the military involvement, they may have known that it went back in your family prior to you, not only the military involvement, but they may know that the alien involvement does. So I think there's a whole list of ways that they could determine that someone's an abductee. And certainly if someone has gone public with their experiences,
sure,
or even not gone public, if you've communicated with emails or mail or
well, what about a mole, Melinda? What about a mole within an organization, for example, that deals with the abductees, not you, so don't take it the wrong way, but a mole.
Oh, no.
But
you're on to me.
but somebody like you, somebody who deals with them,
yeah,
and he or she reports right back to these covert folks?
Well, please, nobody out there think that of me.
Another conspiracy has just been born, right?
No, absolutely. Certainly, you know, there's a long history of UFO organizations being both infiltrated and also being started up.
Sure.
The founders of various UFO organizations have long histories of covert intelligence and CIA and NSA kind of involvement behind them. So that these, you know, some people say this was what caused them to have an interest in the subject. Okay. Or it could be that they're there serving some service or some capacity. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. Most abductees are not really working with those organizations in large numbers. They tend to go to independent researchers. And I have no reason to think that most of the independent researchers, as far as those, you know, who work with abductees and do regression therapy, this kind of thing, I'm not aware of any of them having an intelligence background, at least I hope not. but I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
Okay. There is an acronym out there for MILABS, Military Mind Control and ET Abduction. Tell me about this.
Well, MILABS, or MILABS, is pronounced both ways, refers to the military involvement in the harassment and surveillance and reabduction of abductees. A gentleman by the name of Helmut Lammer from Austria, him and his wife, Helmut and Marion Lammer, wrote a couple of papers and then eventually a book. The title of their book was, as you just said, MILABS, and then it was called Military Mind Control and Alien Abduction. So they kind of coined that term. That was back in, I think, about 94, 95 off the top of my head that they coined that term. The experiences already existed before that term was ever given to them. You had people like Leah Haley, Kay Wilson, Carla Turner, Kim Carlsberg, you know, a number of people that come to mind that were coming forward with this harassment, surveillance, reabduction, being abducted at the hands of the military and being interrogated about their experiences, this kind of thing. People were sharing those experiences prior to the term being, you know, assigned to it and coined. But ever since an acronym was coined, you know, by Helmut, now that's become the catch-all phrase. I personally start to have a little bit of a problem with that. A lot of people have misconstrued to the point where they've come up with various explanations for MILABS and now say that, oh, all ET abductions are only the military or only the covert ops.
Right.
And no, that in my research, and you know I work closely with Joe Montaldo.
Yes.
I have 50 cases. Joe's got about 200 cases. I'm working also with a few other researchers. I said Kay Wilson earlier, a few other people. Carla Turner back before she passed away. All these people have had cases too. When you add these together, you're talking about a couple hundred, you know, documented cases. And looking at that, so far with all those cases, none of them have said that they feel that their case was 100% only military cause. Some people have speculated that, but there's not been a lot of evidence in support of that. And those researchers feel strongly that the reason this is happening is because these people have had very real alien experiences. That in my research, so I'll just totally own this in case anyone listening who's also a researcher that heavily disagrees with me. In my research, in my cases, it seems to be that it's because these people have had very real contact experiences that the military and the covert ops guys have any interest in them whatsoever. And it's because they want information about their ET experiences.
All right. When the coverts do what they do, explain how they work.
Well, it's actually much like an alien abduction. First off, it can start off very low level. You can start off with basic, being watched and being followed. You may have, for instance, it may start off with an abductee just having email or mail tampering or phone things go on. You may have interrupted phone calls. Everything from comments being made during your phone calls or just clicks and sounding like someone else came on the line. But these may be placed at very odd moments. You may be talking about the subject specifically or talking about abductions or speaking with a researcher, and it seems to be timed, like they wanted you to know that they were listening kind of thing. And then this kind of stuff can then escalate to being watched and being followed, having a van parked out front of your house, having being photographed going and coming from your house, having what's called black helicopter harassment. These are unmarked dark helicopters, usually reported as
silent. They're very silent,
very
right?
Very silent, uh-huh. And these things are often reported flying illegally low with no markings on them. It's not just like a helicopter flies over and it's like, oh, I had a helicopter harassment. No, you know when you're being harassed. These things will circle repeatedly and are usually below whatever the height limit is in your area. For instance, where I live, it's like 600 or 700 feet. These things might be at like 400 feet above the roof. They're usually very low. And so you know, and it repeats in circles. And a lot of the abductees have repeats of this. They'll have multiple times when they have helicopter harassment. I know one abductee alone who started to take photos, and I believe she has over 200 photographs she's taken of helicopter harassment she's had.
Jeez.
Now, granted, that's an extreme case.
That is.
In my case, I've had helicopter harassment, on last count, I think it was about 8 times that I've had helicopter harassment. You know, so a lot of, I have, you know, and I've come up with kind of an arbitrary scale of people having experiences. So on my own arbitrary scale of 1 being just phone stuff and mail stuff, and 10 being, for instance, it can get really bad. Then you get into, then besides having harassment surveillance, you can be approached in public. I know what someone who was a dealer in Las Vegas who was approached, and a guy, this happened to her twice, someone sat down at her table as she was dealing, and they warned her away in front of other customers, they warned her away from the subject. So it can be that blatant. Another abductee I know spoke at a conference, got on like a van at the conference site to go back to her hotel. A guy got on this, you know, van just to take her back to the hotel. A guy got on, and he proceeded to warn her and tell her not to speak, that kind of thing. So those kinds of direct face-to-face confrontations start to happen. And then it can escalate to having the re-abduction scenario. That's where you get picked up again. You may have medical procedures done. You may have an interrogation. The interrogations are anything about, well, I can get into that in a moment, all the different things they may be about, but a lot of reasons why they may be involved in picking somebody up. It involves a couple different categories. And then it may go further. I used to think, okay, having the re-abduction was kind of like the end, like that's as bad as it got. But then I started to have cases of people, another abductee coined this term, the minder scenario. These are intelligence insiders that befriend the abductee.
Trick them.
Sometimes not trick them. Sometimes they're right up front. And a lot of times the abductee feels that they're being provided information to confirm their experiences or supportive information like, hey, this person's disclosing stuff to me. There's a level of confidence. They'll try to get your confidence. That happens a lot. And then sometimes these minder scenarios can be become very controlling, manipulative, where the person is controlling, manipulating their life or warning them away from the subject or keeping them from going public. And then some of the minder scenarios can also be, so some of them are helpful, but some of them are very threatening. Some of them, they start to threaten, they start to tell you to leave it alone, you know, this kind of thing. And it can get very severe. I actually have one case of a lady who married someone with an intelligence background. She was an abductee. She started having all this kind of stuff, as I'm talking about, happen. And she never really shared it a lot with her husband. Her husband knew she was doing some lectures and stuff. And all of a sudden, she kind of started talking about this aspect, including it in her experiences. One day, her husband pulls a gun on her, and at gunpoint says, "I'm here to keep you from doing that." And, like, this was this whole manipulation, and they had been married for years and had kids. So that's like an extreme case. But I know people that have gotten business deals only to have the person say, you know, we're going to end the business deal or put you out of business if you continue with this kind of stuff. So it's gotten pretty severe. Like, my own experiences, on, if I have a scale of 1 to 10, as I said, I arbitrarily came up with, I've placed myself at about a 7 or 8 on my own scale. I've had cases that have had a lot more activity and worse things happen to them than me, by far.
Melinda, their effort is to try to discredit these people internally? Are they trying to make them go crazy or just simply harass them and scare them?
Well, both. No, usually it's for the purpose of harassing them, scaring them, or controlling their lives, or influencing them in some way.
Primarily to keep them quiet.
Yes, or to get information from them.
Okay.
You know, to get information from them about their experiences. You know, a big thing that they're interested in is, well, do you want me to get into that?
Yeah, but exactly, because I want to know what they're after and why.
Okay. I've come up predominantly from my cases, and I've shared this with Joe and some of the other people, so I feel that the other people doing this research are in agreement with me. Four predominant categories. One is that they're interested in the alien motives and agenda.
Okay.
A lot of the people who get the re-abduction and in the interrogation, now there's always like threats and warnings.
Okay, but that tells me alone, that statement alone tells me they don't know what the motives and agenda might be. So that's why they need to go to these abductees.
Or they're using the abductees as a form of verification. Are the abductees coming up with the same thing that they think they know?
All right, but it doesn't sound like they're in cahoots with the aliens, right?
Well, but in some cases they are. Now, I know this is going to sound...
All right, well, I'll let you go through these points.
Yeah, okay. But we'll get into that in a second, because yeah, they are involved with some of them. The next one is, so that's one category, motives and agenda. The next one is medical and genetics. So it's like, what's happened to you medically? Have you been messed with medically by the aliens? And have you been enhanced genetically? And alien genetics. Do you have any alien genetics? You know, that kind of thing. So the medical genetics part, that would be category two.
Okay.
Category three is the testing and development of psi abilities. Psi, PSI, being psychic, telepathy, telekinesis, psychokinesis, these kinds of things.
Handed down from the ETs or always had?
There's amongst abductees, there's been kind of a running question or running inside joke, which came first, the psychic or the abductee? I attend Yvonne Smith's Zero Support Group, and I just went to it actually last Sunday.
Okay.
And we actually just discussed this last Sunday. People having paranormal experiences and psychic abilities who are abductees is very common. The question has always been, you know, like I said, the chicken or egg, which came first? Does the psychic abilities have something to do with your being picked up, you know, by the aliens and them having an interest in you, or is it a byproduct of the experience? Well, I think most of the researchers and the abductees generally feel now it's both. It is both, has something to do with why they choose you, and it also has, and also the genetic background, that's a big part, but it also is a byproduct of the experience, that if you have psychic awareness and abilities, they're enhanced in the experience, or even if you weren't aware of them, they're brought out as a byproduct of the experience. So abductees have all sorts of psi abilities. And then abductees also realize when they're on board the craft that the craft reacts to thought. The aliens do everything through thought, through telepathy. And the technology has a thought component, a consciousness component to it. So the abductee often realizes that they can affect the technology with their mind. And then there's one more category. You want me to say that?
Yeah, just mention it real fast.
Okay, the last category is technology and its operation, but that may be the biggest category.
All right, we'll talk about that when we come back. Melinda, you said that your fourth main area, technology and operations. Go ahead and elaborate on
it. Yeah, that the abductees are questioned about alien technology and its operation. Some abductees have been handed a device or a piece of equipment that they believed, this is in a human experience where they're taken and re-abducted by covert ops or military, you know, definitely humans, guys in uniforms usually. If they're taken, for instance, to an underground base or something like that, or a lab facility where they're then interrogated, often in that interrogation involves being questioned about alien technology. They'll be handed a piece and asked if they know how to operate it, a piece that the abductee is led to believe is alien technology or has been reverse engineered from alien technology, and they'll ask if the abductee knows how to operate it. They'll question the abductee, you know, did you fly craft? Did you navigate it? Did you see its propulsion system? What did you see? They may have you draw a part. They may ask you about it, this kind of thing. This comes up quite a bit. And then also its operation. How do you operate it? I believe that this may be a driving factor behind all this. Like I was saying with my being uncomfortable with the term My Labs because it's been misconstrued now and used as a replacement where people are saying, okay, it's military or covert ops in lieu of ETs. But what I say is it's military and covert ops because of ETs, because the alien abduction experiences are absolutely real, that these guys are interested in all. And like they reverse engineer craft, you know, like there's a crash retrieval or something is shot down, brought down, borrowed, loaned, you know, however they procure the alien technology. They then go about reverse engineering it. How does it work? Can we duplicate it? Can we build something in human technology that mimics it? So I believe reverse engineering the craft is about the technology. Well, what I started to call, instead of calling it My Labs, I'm calling it Re-Abs, which means both re-abduction, but I more specifically mean reverse engineered abductees. And what I believe they're doing in the case of these My Lab scenarios is that they're reverse engineering the abductees. Yes, for information about the technology, but more importantly, what can they learn from the abductee that they can teach and develop to train personnel? I believe if reverse engineering the craft is about the technology, then reverse engineering the abductee is about the personnel. They're learning training procedures. They're learning, you know, operational procedures, this kind of thing. And I believe that somewhere along the way, someone figured out abductees were another source of information about this. You can only get so much from studying the technology itself. While I do believe they have some involvement with ETs, I think it's very limited. I think maybe they don't trust all the information. If they're not getting the information they want from the ETs, abductees, of which there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, worldwide, are very easy to access for information. And, you know, they get to do this clever practicing and development of mind control techniques while they're at it, which is another reason that they're involved is this, you know, development and practice of mind control. But I think that's really a byproduct. That's not the reason they're doing it. They just use those techniques in order to carry out the operations. But yeah, I think what's really driving it is the technology. For instance, the motives and the agenda, why would you have a concern for motives and agenda? Well, you need to know what technology do you need. Are we having a Cold War or a hot war? Do we need to plan for something? Is there an invasion coming? You know, so motives and agenda are all about why you need the technology. I believe that genetics is because there's a genetic component to being able to operate the technology. You know, hybrid functioning technology basically takes a hybrid person in order to operate. The psi abilities is because not only for the sake of, you know, developing the psi abilities and the all the purposes they may have for those, but there's a huge, as I was saying earlier, component to the technology where there's this mental interface, this consciousness interface component that I think is one of the things they've learned to really be able to fly the craft, to be able to navigate it, to be able to operate the technology. You have to have this mental connection to it. And I believe that's one of the reasons they're developing the psi. They want to know, do the abductees perform the psychokinesis? Can they move the matter with their mind? And that's one thing that they're interested in. And then, of course, more specifically, questions about the technology and its operation.
You know, the work you've been doing, how did you get involved in the covert end of this? Something must have started to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, the next thing I'm going to say, and I don't say this lightly, and it's a big step here on, you know, national radio, international radio to say this, but It started with self-investigating my own experiences. 20 years ago, 1989, I learned through a whole long process. It wasn't a decision I came to easily. I sought the help of a qualified psychotherapist because I thought I was losing my mind. But I discovered that I had had alien abduction experiences, were having them currently at that time, and have continued to have them periodically ever since. 2 years into kind of my discovery process, I learned I was having this covert involvement. The first experience, I actually didn't remember. In 1990, a roommate of mine and her daughter, who was staying with her at the time, witnessed what they said were military men in my room shouting orders at me and me crying and pleading, no, no. I had no memory of this. They did not tell me this. They told me about 2 years later. I had stayed in contact with her, saw her again, told her about my research, where it had gone, what I had gotten into, and she said, I'm so glad you know now. And I go, I know what? What do you mean? And then she proceeded to tell me. And this was like in, you know, 92, that she told me back in 1990 she had witnessed, her and her daughter had witnessed this experience happening to me. I had no memory of that, and she was adamant that they witnessed this. In fact, her daughter at the time, who was staying with her for a period of time, moved out right away, and I was given a story that she missed her dad, they were separated, she wanted to go be back with her dad.
Right, any kind of excuse.
Yeah, yeah, when in fact it was what was happening to me scared them so bad, is what she actually, at this point, you know, confided in me. And then in 91, I was driving with two friends. We had what seemed to be a very usual alien abduction experience while driving, a period of missing time taken from the car while driving.
And a lot of people have experienced that.
Yes, yeah, it's very typical in alien abduction. And the three of us all got regressed separately. We all had a certain amount of conscious memory, but we all went through separate regressions, but with the same therapist. That therapist later told us that we had each seen a man in military uniform in the background during the experience, like he was there in some official capacity, monitoring what was happening, even though we're predominantly having an alien experience. And then in 93, in August, 1993, August, and then in November, I had two experiences. One involved a medical procedure at the hands of humans in like what I call a hazmat tented style environment.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one in November of 93, I was picked up and interrogated specifically about alien technology. Well, as I started to have these experiences and figure out this was going on with me, roughly in, you know, like I said, 92, 93, I met other abductees who had had the same experiences. And I met researchers. I became friends with Carla Turner, who was alive then. And she said, Melinda, you've really got to share this. It's really important that you share this with people and you go forward with this. And she encouraged me to do that. And she was talking about it, and she was a great role model, and I thought she was really gutsy for doing it, and she encouraged me. And luckily, I've been so fortunate. I've had so much support from within the abduction community. If any of them are thinking anything negative, I'm not hearing it. I'm hearing the good stuff.
What branch of government or black ops do you think this program fits under?
Well, I think it's many working together. As I said, people may not like this term, but I like to call it a cabal, a group that is managing ET information.
But to me, a cabal is somewhat removed from organized government.
Exactly, and I believe it is. This is shadow government. This is black ops, yeah. Shadow government. This isn't your surface level of government. I would be absolutely confident that the president right now has no idea. I think Bush probably didn't have any idea. There may have been people around him that did. I wouldn't rule that out. It's kind of like the other covert subjects. When you get into, you know, the guest you had on previously and you talk about covert manipulation in other areas, when you've had Alex Jones on and all that, I think a lot of it is pointing to the same people. And so I think this, but even within that, I think it's compartmentalized. I think this has become so compartmentalized, so much, you know, Corso, in his book The Day After Roswell, called it a satellite government, a government within a government. And I think that's a really good way to look at it, that it's a satellite government.
Could this be part of the Illuminati? The globalists?
Yeah. I don't know to the degree. I mean, that some of them would know and are involved, yes, because I think what's driving, this is a whole other issue, but what I think is driving the whole cover-up and policy of non-disclosure is that they're profiting from it. So I think there's a real profit motive. Everybody, it's so compartmentalized, all these various compartments, CYA and everyone watching out for their little piece of the pie,
sure.
Their little piece of the black project, black ops, financial pie.
Yes. That continues to grow.
Yes.
I mean, we have missing trillions of dollars. We don't know where it is.
Yeah.
And I do.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got it.
I know, too. Yeah.
Nothing's ever missing. Someone has it.
Yes. That's right. That's right. And I think this is self-perpetuating, that this is so far into the black world, it's created its own little economy. And I think there's a lot of spin-off technology that gets leaked out to the aerospace world and out to the science world.
Reverse engineering, you mean?
Reverse engineering, mm-hmm.
Tell me, Melinda, what happens to these abductees after they are reverse engineered, basically? I mean, do they fit back in society? Are they okay, or are they screwed up? What happens to them?
Oh, that's a good question. The abductees try to fit back in. I mean, anyone, even with the alien abduction experience, the hardest part is not the experience itself. The hardest part is then living life after you've had the experience. The fear of ridicule is not to be underestimated. It is crippling. The fear of ridicule, the fear that you'll lose your job, that you'll lose your career, that you'll be ostracized by your family, that you may lose family or friends. I know so many abductees that have lost marriages over this, have had their children taken away from them over this. It is so tough for the abductee that many of them keep it very hidden, very private, because
if they can.
And then when you have this military involvement, it compiles that. It's one thing to have something happen, against your will, something traumatic at the hands of something other, something alien. It's altogether different when it's people doing it to you, people who you believe should be there to protect, defend, and serve mankind. And if they're there to protect and defend mankind, and then they do this to you, the sense of betrayal, I have this with my male cases, guys in particular, who are really brought up to believe a certain way about the military. And then when they have these experiences, they're just devastated by it. And women too, but it just seems like it's been more intense for some of the guys because of the mindset and the military mindset that people, in our society are brought up to support, their sense of patriotism. Mm-hmm. And so the extreme sense of betrayal that happens to them.
Huge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well,
I have to tell you, I forget what your original question was. I got off on a tangent.
Well, no, we talked about what happens to these abductees when they're reverse engineered. And how do they ease back into society, or are they all screwed up?
Well, most of them go on and live their life. I was once quoted actually in a newspaper article saying, I live my life because I absolutely insist on it. And this is true of people with these experiences. They insist on maintaining a normal life and do everything they can, and it can be very hard. Luckily, it seems in these military involvement cases that there's a certain way in which they go about doing it and then cover up what they're doing. And some of the mind control and stuff used maybe helps allow for a certain kind of disconnect from it. The abductees are able to see it for what it is and move on. It seems like, on one hand, all the cases I've dealt with have said their military involvement experiences are a lot harder than their alien ones. But it seems like once you've been able to wrap your head around having the alien experience and put that in and deal with that in your life and get on with your life, but then when you have this happen, it brings all that up again.
Sure.
You already have coping mechanisms in place. So you've already learned to deal with your alien experiences, and I think a lot of people use those techniques then to help them through this as well.
I don't believe you would agree with some of David Jacobs' theories of what's going on. Would you two differ?
Dave's a friend, but there's some places. All in all, I mean, what his basic abduction theories, I agree with wholeheartedly. He doesn't really address this subject and steers clear of it. I understand, you know, reasons why that might be. And he doesn't feel he has any cases of it. I think he may not be seeing it in the cases he has. He may have cases that are hesitant to say something to him because they already know his feelings about it, so they don't share it with him. I get this a lot from abductees. Now, not necessarily cases of his, but I have people come to me all the time with their military involvement experiences, and they'll tell me they worked with some major researcher. I could list a whole list of names. And I'll say, did you tell them? And they'll say, oh, no, I didn't tell them. They wouldn't understand. And unfortunately, I get this a lot. And so that may be going on with Dave. I think the major abduction researchers have strived so hard to achieve a certain credibility, to have abductions be taken seriously, to really do work to help the abductees, that they feel that addressing this subject may complicate that. It may somehow diminish their credibility because they feel that, you know, possibly that somehow putting a human face on this somehow diminishes the credibility of it being an ET one, which is why I'm so quick to say it's military because the ET experiences are real. That's the only reason these guys are involved. It's the only reason they're spending the money and the time and their interest in the abductees is because of the alien experiences.
What's your take on craft retrievals?
Well, craft retrievals, you know, could be anything from things that crash to things that are you know, loaned by the ETs or shot down. I wouldn't rule that out if they're brought down, whether that's through technology or weaponry. Or, you know, I think there's a variety of ways that craft can be achieved. There's a number of people who are doing very good research in that. Of course, Ryan Wood comes to mind in his crash retrieval conference, which I recommend heavily. You know, I think there's a lot of people doing good work in that area. And I think in the crash retrievals, obviously, when they get the craft, it's not about just having the craft. It's then about the hardware. They then go about learning about it, reverse engineering it. How does it work? Can we duplicate it? Can we apply it to our own military technology? And the relationship to the abduction to the rehab cases is somewhere along the way they realized the abductees were another source of information. I mean, abductees have had hands-on, you know, firsthand hands-on experience. You know, who else can they go to who's navigated and flown a craft and worked its controls or worked the technology? I mean, again, I don't think their connection with the ETs is that strong where they're getting information or trusting the information if they get it. I think that they learned that the abductees were another source of information, and in their, you know, effort to data mine for information, they monitor surveillance and reabduct abductees.
Melinda, I'm bringing in Whitley Strieber next hour for just a half hour because I want you to talk with him about his experience and get his take on what you think happened, because he's still not sure who they were. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Joining us this half hour, Whitley Strieber, best-selling author of more than 20 books, including, of course, Communion, and an incredible story that occurred to him a long, long time ago. And, of course, Melinda Leslie with us. Melinda, you're back with us?
Yes.
Okay, and here's Whitley Strieber. Whitley, how are you, my friend?
Well, it's good to be back, George.
Likewise, too. By the way, I heard you had a very successful event down in Nashville.
Yeah, we're having another one in Joshua Tree in California in October. It hasn't been announced yet. It's October. It's going to be the week of October, weekend of October the 16th. Excuse me.
Good for you. I know William Henry was just jumping for joy.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time in Nashville, and we're just about to do it again for that reason.
Super. Melinda, I wanted Whitley on this half hour to chat with you about what happened to him and see if there's any similarities with what you've been investigating with these covert ops.
Sure.
Go ahead, Melinda and Whitley.
Yeah, about a year ago, Melinda, I recall you asked me in an email to participate in research about this, and I wrote back saying I didn't really have enough traction. Those weren't the exact words. And the reason is that while I have a lot of experiences that involved clearly people, mm-hmm. I don't have anything nearly as elaborate as you do. In other words, like, for example, there was one experience where I woke up in a downstairs bedroom in my cabin in New York, and in this room there was a gray, there was a man who we used to see in our woods a lot, who I'm not even sure if he was entirely human. He was very, very odd looking. But there were also two military men in military uniforms of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were, I didn't recognize the uniforms in particular. They could have been from anywhere, but they certainly were military uniforms. And of course, when I had this thing put into my ear, this little object that was put into my left ear. It's still there, yeah, because the doctor, when he tried to remove it, moved away from the scalpel, and he withdrew because he didn't understand what was going on. But it was put in by two people. I saw them. I was awakened by the sound of gravel crunching in the driveway, which doesn't have a very UFO-ish feel to me. It sounds like a car was arriving.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the middle of the night, and I had a carefully locked gate, and for a car to be showing up there was pretty scary. And the next thing I knew, in the backyard, I heard a male voice say, "Condition red," as if he was aware of the fact that I had waked up. And then as I first went for the floodlights, and then when I realized I was not alone in the room, there were these two people coming across the room toward me, I tried to go for my gun. And the next thing I knew, this whole event was unfolding. I was lying on my side, unable to move. There was blackness in my eyes. The woman was saying something to me, and there was a lot of pressure going back and forth on the side of my head. When the doctor tried to take this thing out, it was a white disc, and he removed a piece of it. And he's been on Coast with me, Dr. John Lerma, talking about this. It still remains the strangest thing that he's ever known in his life. And the pathologist, the same, who called him up and said, "This is not natural." He got a little corner, a little piece of it. He said it's got cilia on it that are biological, but they are in a metallic base. He said, "I've never seen anything like this." Not only that, there was no scar at all after this was put into me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, now I'll tell you another thing, Melinda, that I remember just tonight, and I had the same feeling that I had when I used to go, to a few of your lectures and things.
Yes.
That there's something that's on the tip of my tongue that I can't quite get out. But I did remember something very interesting. This was back when Congressman Schiff was getting the GAO to try to investigate the Roswell incident.
Sure. From New Mexico.
New Mexico, right. And I heard during that time that they had located a military base somewhere in the United States that was not on the Pentagon roster and was not being paid for by the U.S. Treasury. And I was absolutely fascinated by that, but I couldn't find out any more information, and I don't think he was able to either. This kind of just sort of passed through in the GAO investigation. It was never acknowledged any further, but as I recall, it was someone in his staff, or it might have been in the staff of one of the senators that was interested in this, got this information from one of the GAO investigators and then couldn't get anything more out of them. But it was fascinating, and it suggests that it might be, just as you say, Linda, there might be an extensive covert operation going, and we cannot forget that a couple of days after 9-1-1, on the Saturday after 9-11, Donald Rumsfeld proceeded to announce that the Pentagon had lost $1 trillion.
Huh.
Where'd that go?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money. That, even though the dollar may be not the strongest currency, it once was, it's still a lot of money.
Yeah. I'm off a few dollars every once in a while in my checkbook, Whitley, but not $1 trillion.
And they announced it. And probably, I mean, that moment was picked carefully. They saw that it was the perfect moment to announce a thing like that. They would never have a time when people were less interested in some kind of crazy announcement about fiduciary problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was perfect. And so that's when it came and went. And it was never picked up by the press. Nobody ever did anything about it. There was no investigation. It just disappeared.
Well, Whitley, first off, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience.
I'm glad to, Melinda. It was absolutely fascinating listening to you in the first hour.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, it means a lot to me to have someone like yourself come on, and because that's another thing that's expressed to me by people with these experiences. It's even harder to talk about and come forward with. The fear of ridicule, as I was saying earlier, and the credibility issues, it's very difficult. And people don't want to come across as being unpatriotic or, you know, or anything like that, or conspiratorial. So I understand, and I appreciate it so much. You know, unfortunately, I can say this, that your experiences are so common to other cases and what I'm getting from other people. Your memory having, you know, a person here, a person in uniform there, stuff being said, a car on the road, you know, all these kinds of things are the way that someone first remembers an experience. And, you know, and unfortunately, I can say, you know, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
But it's not a club anyone wants to be a part of. You know, certainly, it certainly sounds like you've had the experience. I think your background of alien experiences is certainly well documented, and I am not surprised at all that you would have this. In fact, if you were to ever tell me point blank you'd never had military involvement, I'd be surprised. But also, you did write about it in some of your books to a lesser degree. You wrote about helicopter harassment, being watched, being followed, some veiled threats, you know.
We knew a reporter. He wrote a book called Report on Communion about me, a fellow named Ed Conroy. And he was fantastically followed by helicopters,
mm-hmm.
to the point that once Ann and I were down in San Antonio and we're in a hotel, we're going to meet him for breakfast, and we came out of the hotel and we saw overhead in the middle of downtown San Antonio two helicopters nose to nose, with their blades intertwining. And I said to Ann, I don't think that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, of course it is. It's right there. We can see it. And the thing slowly went overhead. I called the FAA. I called a helicopter pilot about it. The man, Ed, had seen it too. And what in the world was that? It couldn't have been. They weren't normal helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
Helicopters can't do that. They would have both crashed.
That brings up a side thing, that there's something in alien abduction where people feel that they've seen, you know, alien craft cloak as different things and try to project themselves as different things. Certainly that may be a possibility. But the cases that have the military involvement stuff, when they have the helicopter harassment, it's pretty cut and dry. You know, it's pretty obvious. It's the repetitiveness of it. It's, you know, they're able to photograph it and videotape it extensively and that kind of thing. I mean, I don't know if you saw helicopters in that incident or that could have been an ET craft.
Well, if they were helicopters, those pilots were really brilliant.
Yeah. but you know, as I said, in your books, you've mentioned harassment and surveillance. So,
there was a bit of that during those early years, especially. And that went on a lot. You know, you mentioned mind control just briefly,
mm-hmm.
and I know another case of a reporter who one morning I was going to be interviewed by him, and I came to the office where he was, and he said, you know, I had an incredible dream last night. I dreamed that officers in a military officers came and got me into a car and took me in my pajamas to an Air Force base. There was an Air Force base near where he lived. And they told me, they gave me a list of questions they wanted me to ask you.
Hmm.
And I was supposed to remember these questions, but I don't think I can remember them now. Anyway, it was just a dream. And I thought, why would he say that? It sounds like he's describing a real experience. I simply said, are you sure it was a dream? And the man had a temper tantrum. Mm-hmm. He blew up in my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, this guy is not playing with a full deck.
Yeah.
Something's very odd
here.
Yeah,
protest too much, you know, that and like you said, with the concept of some mind control going
right
on there, I don't know, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Well, I don't know either, but it was very, very odd.
Mm-hmm.
And then he proceeds to ask me a series of innocuous questions that I'd been asked 100 times before. So it turned out that the questions that he had to ask weren't even good.
Yeah.
There have been, you know, another thing, you mentioned helicopters, but there used to be on mornings after we thought something had happened,
mm-hmm,
in the cabin, there would very often, you would hear very high up a plane, not a jet, a prop plane, but with high-pitched engines. It was an odd-sounding plane, like some kind of very, very high compression turbocharged engine or something. If you looked up and you saw this plane, if you spotted it, it was white. It had two very long engine nacelles and a wing so thin that it looked like the darn thing would fall on you. I had a physicist up there. I had a lot of people up there that saw this, but this particular guy knew a lot about aeronautical engineering and planes. And he was there one night when we had the visitor showed up, and not to him, unfortunately, for him, but to other people in the house. And sure enough, that morning, the plane was there. So I said, let's come on out, John, and let's take a look at this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks up at it, and he jumped back. I said, oh, my God. He said, it looks like it's going to fall on me. He said, those aren't wings. They're not wings.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it seemed like something connected with the military, because there was a guy who was involved in this investigation that I referred to earlier who would usually call later in that same day to find out how we were doing.
Mm.
And he was definitely being paid by the U.S. government,
and
definitely.
And you've had experiences, I think I've heard you talk about before, where you know, I one abductee coined it, or you know, called it the minder scenario, where someone with an intelligence background befriends you and either asks you for information or provides you information. Do you feel you've had like insider types disclose stuff to you?
Yeah, but there was long on the ask, short on the provide.
Oh, there you go.
Very
there you
short
go
on the provide.
Yeah, there you go. So,
yeah.
And I thought that was the case. So you know what. What can I say? In every way, you fit my cases, and unfortunately, I'm not surprised. I mean, Joe Montaldo calls it advanced abductees. And that's not to say they're better or there's anything better about their case or anything like that. But an advanced abductee, like Joe says, is just an abductee who's had the full gamut of alien experience. The you know all the various types and procedures and psi stuff and medical stuff and hybrids and, you know, everything.
Yeah, we've had a lot
exactly
in our lives.
Exactly. And it is more likely that an advanced alien abductee is going to have this happen and have quite a bit of this and even have the minder scenario, have the harassment, have the surveillance, have the technology. I'm not surprised.
I want to describe one more thing to you. So I've hardly ever talked about this. And with you on the phone, I want to know if you are remember or have ever heard of anything else like this.
Okay.
This was a very frightening incident. We were living in infuriating. We were living in Texas in a little condo at the time. It was right on the street. In other words, you could just walk up to it. There was a screen porch there. It was not all that private. And I was lying in bed, taking a nap in the afternoon. And suddenly I heard a voice inside my head, like a radio, but inside my head, threatening to kidnap me. And I thought to myself at first, what in the world is this going on? Is it a dream? Because, you know, it's not something you usually expect to hear. Mm-hmm. And it repeated. In fact, it even laughed at me. And I realized it was not a dream. And it was somebody doing this. Mm-hmm. So I jumped up out of the bed because I figured they were nearby, or they might be nearby. And I instinctively ran out onto the porch. And there were two men there standing right beside the wall of the bedroom and the little cul-de-sac beside the porch. And they were very surprised to see me. One of them was a terrible, angry-looking man. And they ran back down to the street to a black Mustang and drove off. And I was so damn mad. I ran out of the porch. I ran after him, tried to get the license number. And later, I found out that this kind of thing can be done at close range with microwave technology. It's not, it's something that's been around for a while. It's just, I guess it's not used. Maybe it's used by the Rangers or something. And I guess it could really upset someone trying to be on sentry duty if some Rangers were creeping up. And that started to happen to them.
Can you imagine the data, Whitley and Melinda, that they have on people? They must have volumes of material.
What's the point of it all?
Yeah.
Well, with the experience you just shared, originally I was going to think, when you first started to share it, a post-hypnotic suggestion giving during an experience involving the military covert ops guys, where they'll give a post-hypnotic suggestion for the abductee to stop or to do something, or something bad will happen to them, that kind of thing. But then when you said the guys were next door and then they ran off and got in their car, you're probably right about the microwave technology.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't.
Do you have any other stories like this?
Yeah. I mean, yes, those kinds of stories are common within the range of these experiences. Absolutely. I've all sorts of things like that. People have gotten a thought only to have that infamous, helicopter hovering right outside.
Why do they always have to be so hostile? Why not sing Puff the Magic Dragon? Why do they have to terrorize me?
Yeah.
I'm serious. What's the point?
Obviously, there's a certain amount of control in it. You know, the intimidation factor is there. But I think, like you guys were saying, they have a volume of information. I don't think it's about necessarily having a volume of information on the abductees per se, other than that they're looking for certain particular types of information that fit into those four categories. I think they're looking for information. Do you know about alien agenda and motive? Can you provide more information to them? Do you have technical information? Are they interested in you and genetically? And those things might come in to, if you had a regression over one of your experiences, to get more in depth in what procedures were actually done on you.
Whitley, thank you so much for being on the program. Whitley's website, unknowncountry.com. We'll be back with Melinda Leslie in just a moment. Okay, welcome back to Coast with Melinda Leslie. Melinda, earlier we were talking about the four areas of major interest here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to number one, the aliens, the motives and agenda you talked about. Let's elaborate on that.
Okay. Sure. Before I do, though, in the event that Whitley's still listening.
No, he is. Of course he's still listening.
Well, yeah. What can I say but wow?
He's one of a kind, isn't he?
Yeah, and Whitley, thank you so much for sharing your personal experience. From the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate that. So the first one, alien agenda and motive. What do you want to know?
What's the motive? What's the agenda?
What's interesting is I have to tell you, from my cases that get asked this in the interrogation, they actually don't give the interrogators a lot of information. They actually don't know. They're usually dumbfounded. Why are they being asked this? You guys should know. They may even be an alien present in the experience or present during some part of the experience. with the military and their environment, just like the stories Whitley just shared of an alien and two military guys in the room together. And a lot of times the abductee is like, you tell me, you guys should know. You're the ones who are, you know, have a handle on this. And often the abductee doesn't know. But the abductees in alien, you know, in their alien abductions do get information, do get visuals. There's a lot of things about earth changes, earth catastrophe kind of stuff. A lot of abductees get dreams about that. They get dreams about, you know, coming catastrophes on earth, coming, you know, plagues, disease, this kind of thing. The thing is, you have to be careful when you get information from the aliens. Is it what is going to happen, or are they looking for your reaction to it? In other words, you don't know if there's what they're...
Like an experiment?
Yeah, why they're giving you this information. Is it telling you something that they say is going to happen, or are they just looking for your reaction? How do you process that information? What would you do about it? A lot of abductees feel they have a strong, like, environmental cause. A lot of them become activists in that way. That's real common for abductees, to really care about animals and people and the environment and the earth, and they start really educating themselves on earth changes and other conspiracy subjects and this kind of thing. Again, I think that's a byproduct of the experience. As far as, you know, again, I can't say I've heard anything that is absolutely consistent on alien agenda and motives. Now, I know if Joe's listening, he may disagree, because he has a lot of cases that are coming up with this kind of catastrophe picture. But I'm, in my cases, I'm, and in other abduction research, I'm not sure it's that strong. And it seems, too, that different people in different areas, again, we were discussing this recently in the Zero support group of Yvonne Smith, and
right.
It seems like maybe, you know, West Coast people get one vision and East Coast people are getting another vision, and maybe people in other countries are getting something else. And again, I think that has more to do with the group of abductees you're involved with and the information they're giving you or what they're testing you on. And it may not be just because they're showing that to you, it may not be the truth. One thing everyone has learned in abduction research is you cannot trust what the aliens tell you.
I find that fascinating. You cannot trust them.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, because it's so inconsistent, and you don't know what the motive is behind it. Just because they're showing you something doesn't mean that's the way it's going to happen.
Well, and I guess, you know, we think that once you reach a certain level of sophistication and technology and benevolence and everything else, that everybody's that way. I guess there could be some races on this in this universe that just are evil.
You know, I will say one thing, because I just had this as an afterthought, and I thought, what would the rest of the abduction research community say to this, too? One thing that does come up very strong and is not to be, you know, underplayed or underestimated is the production of hybrids, and that they take, you know, sperm from men, eggs from women, that people are presented hybrids, everything from little babies all the way up to adults, everything in between.
Well, maybe they're seeding other worlds.
Well, actually, there's researchers now, Dave Jacobs and Bud Hopkins come to mind right away, and a few others too, that are showing that they may be being brought here to live amongst us. People are having abductions that are being taken to locations on Earth where they're then used to train hybrids. For instance, you know, an abductee has an abduction, but they remember taking two hybrids to the supermarket to show them how to buy groceries or something. I mean, it almost sounds silly, but there are cases of this kind of thing going on. I just heard Dave Jacobs speak for MUFON Orange County and give a terrific presentation about it. There's a lot of information suggesting that some of the hybrids are living here and that they've gone beyond, you know, being kids and being held by the abductees to now the abductees being involved in showing teenage and adult hybrids how to function. And it's a very strange thing, but it's very, very troubling to me to think that, you know, why are the hybrids being brought back here for what purpose? I want to know. I don't know, and I don't think the research shows that, but it seems to be being reported.
All right. Medical and genetics as well, as you were just basically hinting that they're doing things that way.
Mm-hmm.
Do they try to help people medically?
Well, not so much in the military experience. It's more like they're checking out what did the aliens do to you.
Yeah. Any scars, any of this, any of that.
Yeah. That they're checking that out and doing like follow-up medical procedures, mostly exploratory, that they're often questioning the abductee about what did they do to you here and why kind of thing. They just seem to be checking the abductee out medically. There seems to be a genetic component. A lot of abductees claim in their military experiences that they're taken in an underground base that they see cloned humans. And that's something that gets, and again, I think it gets back to that kind of hybrid scenario. It makes me wonder if our military is involved in the same thing. Are they trying to duplicate it and study it because the aliens are doing it? And how better to learn why the aliens might be doing it, but to duplicate it in some way? So this has been reported by people that they do see cloning and that kind of thing going on.
Psi, psychological and psychic work.
Sure.
What is that?
The abductee is tested for psi. They're put through different experiences. They wonder if the abductee can remote view. They are often tested for that. I have this reported to me, you know, the abductees will say, you know, in the military experience that they move something with their mind, and it frustrates the abductee that they've been able to do that in an alien experience. Some of them have been able to duplicate it in the covert ops experiences. But then in life, they're not able to duplicate it, maybe a little bit. I mean, a lot of abductees have a lot of paranormal stuff happen
mm-hmm.
and develop those abilities, but not as profound as they do. And it seems to be the military guys seem to want to know, what are your paranormal abilities? What are you able to do? And you know, can you duplicate any of the stuff you've done with the aliens?
Interesting. And, of course, lastly, as we talked about technology and operations.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, again, abductees are certainly being shown technology but in their alien experiences. They're flying craft. They're sitting at it. They're navigating. I think of Jim Sparks and sitting at the panel working controls and sitting at a computer. And, you know, that kind of experience is actually fairly common for a lot of abductees. And then in the military experiences, there seems to be more of that. They want to know, again, you know, what did you see? Were you able to fly it? Did you navigate it? What do you know about alien technology? This kind of thing. And that comes up in these interrogations.
In your opinion, mind control, are they trying to get these abductees to do things, evil things, bad things?
Well, not so much that. I haven't come across that. The only thing close to that I can say has happened is abductees getting post-hypnotic suggestions to stop themselves should they go public, to hurt themselves or someone else. I have one incredible case of two guys that are brothers. One of them has had the military involvement stuff and abductions. The other one has been a witness to his brothers, but may have had a little bit of it himself. It's kind of hard to say. One day they're in a living room having a discussion where one is talking about his experiences. And maybe they're having kind of a disagreement, but just a very calm disagreement of, no, I don't think that happened, whatever, you know, that kind of thing. Next thing they know, they come to with their arms around each other's throats. And like they were strangling each other, and they realize, and they stop and go, oh, my God, what was I doing?
Yeah.
And in their case, they feel strongly that they might have had a post-hypnotic suggestion to stop themselves from talking about it, and that even the one who didn't think he had experiences, it suggests that he had, and that he was also to stop his brother from talking about it. that kind of thing. I have this is really common. And abductees will, for instance, be walking down a set of stairs, and they'll suddenly get this idea to throw themselves down the stairs, or they'll be driving their car, and they'll get this idea to turn their car off the road. That kind of thing. And like Whitley said with his idea of getting this thing like it, something's going to happen to you if you do this. But then. The abductee always seems to catch themselves and go, what? Like even Whitley, who said, what? This isn't me. I'm, this isn't my normal thought. And the abductee always stops themselves and breaks away from it. But, still those thoughts are there and they know it's not theirs. Now, in most cases, I've come to realize, and the people I've worked with, that that's probably a post-hypnotic suggestion given to them in the actual re-abduction experience to stop themselves should they do something. And then also abductees are given post-hypnotic suggestions that should they have another experience, that they will retain certain information. So it's like you're then used to basically spy on the aliens. Now, Joe tells me, for instance, and this is common in some abduction researchers, when they do regression with people, they'll tell the abductee, they may give them idea of how to stop or become more conscious in the experience or do something that should they have the experience again, they're able to affect it or change it or have more control over it. And so the researchers do that, but it seems like these military guys are really good about giving these post-hypnotic suggestions. So that the abductee, should they have something else happen, retain, for instance, technical information, to be able to retain that, or to be able to retain something, should the alien say this to you, you'll remember, and then often those abductees are then picked up again by the covert ops, and then they retrieve the information that they asked the abductee to get for them.
If somebody thinks they've been abducted, one, what are the signs? Two, what do they do about it?
Okay. I'm very happy to say I had for many years had a list of about 50 abduction traits I'd put together. It exists all over the internet. But my webmaster, Nadine Lalich, co-wrote Barbara Lamb's last book with Barbara Lamb,
sure.
Alien Experiences. And Nadine is now going public with her own experiences. Fantastic. She's also my webmaster. She had compiled, for the work she was doing with Barbara Ann on her own, this incredible list of abduction traits. She took my 50 traits and added it in there, so she compiled a bigger list. So on my website is this list of 65 traits if someone has had an alien abduction. And I am so proud of this now, her combining her list with mine. And it wasn't like my list was never from research I did per se. It was from all the known research out there and what I over the years had come across, what was consistently the traits for abductees. And she did the same. So I feel now we've got this very good list. I actually think it may be one of the best ones out there. How you can go to that is my website, which is www.alienexperiences.com/ Melinda Leslie, and of course it's linked on the co-site.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. And if they go there, they'll see a menu bar at the top, and on the menu bar it says military abductee ? If you click on that, you see a list come up of 20 traits of a military abductee, but at the top of that it says if you answered to 30 or more of the alien abductee questionnaire, well, you click on that and that takes you to the 65 traits. Also, I should say, I know you can also get to it by going directly to alienexperiences.com, and on her front page is this whole text box area that says, if you've had an alien experience, and it's like, a couple paragraphs, and then it says, click here, and you can also get to it there.
Very good.
And it has things like, for instance, there was a Roper poll done. There are two Roper polls, but one of them comes to mind.
One was the old one.
When was the old one?
There was an old Roper poll about UFOs and the belief system.
Yeah. Well, and then there were two done specifically on abduction.
Okay.
Yeah. And the result of the two on abductions basically suggested that over according to the Roper organization, does it very scientifically, and there wasn't a question on there like, are you an alien abductee or have you seen an ET? No, none of those were on there. It was like, for instance, they considered the top five indicator questions to be things like, I don't know if I remember them all off the top of my head, but one of them was, have you awoken paralyzed in bed with a strange presence in the room? So it wasn't just paralyzed in bed. You also had to have a strange presence in the room. And then you had to have one, which is, have you seen balls of light in your home or area? Another one was, have you had a period of missing time of an hour or more where you and others could not account for where you were? And then another one was, I'm forgetting what they
You've
were.
You've already got missing time. You can't remember it.
Yeah, exactly. But they came up with five key indicator questions. Well, of course, those five questions are also worked into our questionnaire. I mean, in fact, I think they had a total of 10 or more questions in that Roper. All those are for instance, involved in our questionnaire and our 65 list. But those five indicators, the number of – you had to have answered yes to all five for them to count you, the Roper organization. For them to count the results, you had to have answered yes to all five, and they were not grouped together. So when you answered them, you were answering things like, you know, general things about your you know, economic state and what you did professionally and health questions, and then, boom, there'd be this other question. They came up, according to the Roper organization – in both cases, approximately, one was just under, and I think the other one was just over, but roughly 4 million people in the continental U.S. alone.
4 million?
In the continental
U.S.
alone.
So you've got to be dealing with 25, 30 million worldwide. Easy.
Well, exactly. And the researchers, you know, say 10 or 15% of the population has had abductions. Even if you take 10% of the worldwide population having abductions, the worldwide population right now is I looked at a site recently, I think it's about approximately 6.7 billion. So 10% would be 600 million.
Now, either we have a lot of people who are having some psychological problems, Melinda, mm-hmm. or there's something very bizarre happening with them,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it's somebody's got to get to the bottom of it in a public way.
Exactly. And even if you just look at the cases that are documented by researchers, you know, here in the U.S. alone, we have researchers in the double digits, well into the double digits. Let's say, you know, 30, 40 top researchers dealing with abductees with separate abduction cases. And most of them have between 500 and 1,500 cases apiece. And so if you average, you know, 1,000 apiece times, you know, times, say, 30 key researchers, you'd be talking 30,000 documented abduction cases.
I got to tell you, Melinda, I miss John Mack. I surely do. I'll be back with you in just a moment. We're going to open up the phone lines now. Questions for Melinda Leslie, or maybe you want to share your abduction stories. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Melinda, where does your work take you next? What do you do?
Oh, goodness. More cases, trying to help people who've had these experiences. As of this moment right now, I'm not scheduled for any upcoming lectures, but I'm talking to some people about maybe some early next year, so I'm hoping that comes together. And I also do other research also besides this. I can't go into any great length about it, but I'm involved in some Roswell research right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
there were no abductees there.
No, not that I know of, but I'm working with Don Schmidt on something. I don't want to go into detail, but I'm working with Don Schmidt on something. I knew a Roswell witness. That's as much as I can say.
Very good. You will tell us when
the time comes.
Oh,
yeah. As soon as I'm able to, and as soon as we have to get some things verified. But
have you ever had a whistleblower, black ops whistleblower, tell you what they're doing in this covert ops?
Oh, yeah. I've had a few people confirm parts of my own experience. I've had 4 individuals. I've actually had a total of 8 of these guys. I just was reviewing some notes before going on tonight and reminded myself that I had 8 of these people. 4 of them all knew this one location I had been taken to for specifically my technology interrogation in November of 93. I've had 4 guys totally, completely independent of each other tell me I was taken based upon my description of the location to a place called China Lake Annex or an annex of China Lake. And all of them claim to have been at the location I described. And I've had four of these guys independently now. So I've had, not that anyone's come forward and explained the whole program to me or anything like that, but I've had, and cases of mine and other people in the field have had people disclose that they knew something about it, that they maybe witnessed one of the operations or were involved in some aspect of it. Some abductees, again, the minder scenario where you meet an insider. Sometimes those insiders help verify part of your experience. It's like part of getting that trust where they're giving you information in order to get information from you. And I love that Whitley said it was kind of a one-way street. It was more about the guy getting information than and very slow on giving anything. What can I say? That's typical in these scenarios. That his telling of that was spot on. You know, I just want to add something real quick, if I may, before we go to questions. You know, thinking before the break and talking to you about the number of people having abductions.
Yes.
Even the documented cases is in the tens of thousands.
But you know what? Even if one was real, that's all you need.
Well, and then given that there's obviously a management of ET information, there's I think of Stephen Greer and all his insiders and other insiders that have come forward and talked about their involvement and disclosed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think of the crash retrievals. And again, I think of Ryan's work and his book suggesting that there may be as many as 74 in the U.S., let alone others that may exist. But given that, there's obviously a management of this information. They're retrieving it. They're back engineering it. They're developing it. They're learning about it. They're interacting with the ETs, like Whitley said about that underground base. And I'm sure probably Richard Sauter's listening tonight, and he's done extensive work on underground bases. Obviously, there's a huge management of this. And those people managing the ET information, putting the spin on it, controlling the flow. We talked earlier about groups being infiltrated or run by, people with intelligence backgrounds. That the management control group, whoever they may be, given the number of abductions, it makes sense. In fact, it would be a complete dereliction of duty if they did not at some point say, what do these people know? What do these abductees know? What information can they provide us? And hence, at that point, abductions became a matter of national security. And I'm going to put my neck out, really out on the line, and say, I strongly feel, and I do not say this lightly, I strongly feel abductions are one of the leading reasons, if not the leading reason, why a cover-up remains, why there is a policy of non-disclosure.
Good point. To the phones we go. First caller we have, Tucson, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Steve, take it away.
How are you doing? Well, I have a quick question. One is, in South America, there was some cows that were actually placed on top of trees. And
yes.
Pretty much
bizarre.
They were – well, it is bizarre. But they had their bellies were cut open and the guts were taken out. But they're on these trees, and they're as high as 30 stories. So I was wondering, one, if you knew anything about that. And two, I was told from a source that in the Roswell incident, what happened was we discovered the UFO, took the UFO, used it for technology. They came down, made an agreement saying that they could abduct us to learn information on the human physical elements in the human psyche. Now, I might be wrong, but that's what I was told. And I just wanted to find out your take on it.
We cut a deal. What do you think?
Well, I know that's in the lore of ufology that possibly happened. I really don't know. I haven't seen any evidence to say for sure. It does come up in the meeting at Holloman Air Force Base or whatever that story is. And so, yeah, I think it's very possible. Now, whether there was an agreement about abducting people, if there was, they've way exceeded it and broken the contract a long time ago. So, truth is, I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting story. I have no way of knowing if it's legitimate or not.
Okay. And what about the cows in South America? I mean, have you heard anything about that or, like, the livestock?
Well, certainly cattle mutilations is, you know, a subset of research in ufology, and I'll, you know, tip my hat, you know, bow to Linda Moulton Howe and her expertise on that, by all means. You know, yeah, I've heard of the stories of cows being left in trees and other things, and again, you know, you would have to look at the research that Linda's done on cattle mutilations, but that certainly is part of it. Now, UFOs aren't always seen with that, but there are some reports of UFOs being involved or seen in relationship to the cow mutilations, or cows even going, you know, up into the air. So I think it suggests that there is a connection.
Okay.
It's probably not the only cause for it. I'm treading on thin ice because this is not my area of research. Linda's really the one to ask.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Okay. You got that. Next up, let's go to Seattle, Washington. Linda, Wildcard Line. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you guys doing?
All right. Listening to KVI, I take it.
Yes.
All right.
And I'm really enjoying listening to you, Melinda.
Thank you.
I'm nervous, not so much about being on the radio, because I've called you before, George. I'm a longtime listener, but I'm an abductee.
Ah, all right. Tell us the story, and then go ahead.
I'm terrified to say it on the radio, because I'm so paranoid someone's going to be tracing this call. That's how paranoid they make you.
Yeah, I understand. No, don't be. I mean, a lot of people share. A lot of people go on radio shows and share, and things don't happen to them, so it doesn't mean something's going to happen. If you just look at, you know, the data alone, it suggests nothing's going to happen. Otherwise, you wouldn't have all these people sharing stories. So they're only going to be interested in you if you have some specific information they may want. So, in other words, whether you go on the air or not has nothing to do with whether they're going to be interested in you.
Well, I was abducted. My first memories was as a five-year-old. And I remember I was raised, well, I was an Air Force kid, so I was born on an Air Force base. My father was in the Air Force, and then he started doing subcontracting with all these aerospace places. And then we basically, I lived a lot of places, but I was raised mostly in upstate New York, Whitley's area. So I had a memory as a five-year-old of being taken to a cornfield and the vehicle coming down, blocked the sky out. I was floating along a path, and they were putting something in the vehicle. They were not real friendly grays. They were putting something in my right ear, and there were two military people standing right in the door watching the whole thing.
Mm.
And I knew they were military because my dad had been in the military, and I didn't understand why they weren't coming to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, was a horrible thing. There were lots of little kids in this big, you know, craft. And they put something in my right ear, and to this day, I still have horrible pain in that ear. Had a lot of trouble with it as a child. And then when I would start to scream, there were grays. Large gray would come up and put his hand on my forehead, and the pain would go away, and mm-hmm. I'd calm down. Then my mother and father, they would casually talk about saucers, and, you know, my brother would always be afraid someone's coming through the window to get him. And my family, we all kind of grew up with this. Like my mom and I saw a saucer, or I say a saucer because it looked like a saucer, through binoculars when I was 16. Yet she turned around and left me on the porch for 2 hours, blocked the door, doesn't remember doing any of that. And I lost 2 hours right there. Because I don't remember her and I last time we were looking through binoculars, and then I'm sitting on the porch by myself. This is, again, on upstate New York. I've had marks on my arms, fingerprints, where mm-hmm. bruises that I couldn't possibly do to myself because mm-hmm. of the position. Bruises go away within, like, 24 hours. Mm-hmm. I've had triangle marks on my legs. And then my son, who is now he's in his mid-20s, he started telling me stories when he was four about the good sky people and the bad sky people.
Mm-hmm.
And how the good sky people would rescue him from the bad sky people and take him to their ship underneath the water, which is right here off Seattle.
Yes, I love this.
Yeah.
And it's like,
have you worked with a researcher or a hypnotherapist? Well,
no, that's one of my questions I wanted to ask. I had contacted Linda Moulton Howe last year sometime, or a couple years.
What state do you live in? I'm sorry to cut you off.
She's in Washington.
I'm in Washington State. And so what originally happened was I had gone to a psychotherapist because I started hearing, not voices, thoughts. And then I all of a sudden I started remembering this language I have. I also have a written language, and I have no idea what it means. I'm like somebody with amnesia. And I'm a psych major, so I thought, oh, my Lord, am I going schizophrenic? What's going on? So I had gone to see just a regular psychotherapist, and she goes, oh, no, something's really going on here. You are not schizophrenic.
I'm not thinking off the top of my head of a specific abduction researcher in Washington State off the top of my head. I recommend that you check out, I think Joe Mantovano's ICAR organization probably has someone in your area that you could talk to and who could maybe help you. I recommend, you know, talking to an abduction researcher, and maybe even, you know, working with a hypnotherapist to get your case, you know, documented and looked at and to give you some clarity about it.
Yeah, because I want to go to somebody I can trust, because for some reason I have in the back of my mind that I have to go to somebody I can trust. I don't trust groups, for instance.
Sure.
You know, I know that I have thoughts that the good, I call them good and bad sky people, the good sky people are from Rigel Contreras. I mean,
well,
I've gotten some very specific information.
You know, I recommend contacting Yvonne Smith, but she's here in California, but she could refer you to someone. And she has a website.
And you're not talking about Peter Davenport, are you? From the National UFO Reporting Center, Melinda?
No. I mean, he doesn't work with abductees.
He
might be able to refer you to one in the area, so he's another person you could certainly contact and ask. He might be able to refer you.
Okay.
In fact, he might be a very good person. He might know of someone in the area. But certainly I think if you contact Yvonne Smith here in California or Joe Mantovano and his ICAR organization, his website is icar1.com. If you contact either of them, I'm sure they can direct you to someone to talk to.
Because are there people you can talk to that don't charge you like $100 an hour?
Talk to them. Tell them your situation. Most of them will. It's not about money. They'll work with you. So don't let the money thing stop you, and be upfront with them about that. And they'll find someone who can help you.
If they try to charge an exorbitant fee, don't go to them.
Yeah,
because a regular psychotherapist, you know, they charge like $100 an hour, and they don't have any idea how to deal with this.
Yeah.
They know that, yes, you're not crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and Linda Moulton Howe and I exchanged emails, but she doesn't know how to deal with this either. And she's like the rest of us, very frustrated, wants answers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like I have amnesia.
No, you need to work with someone who's trained to work with abductees.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate it. I just heard you talking that. I thought, wow, because I have seen military people, and I don't know. I have a lot of memories, and I don't know how to place them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm scared to death of military people. So,
well, find a regression therapist who works with abductees and is trained to do so. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so ICAR1.com.
ICAR1.com or Yvonne Smith. I'm sorry, I don't know her website, but I know if you Google her name and Ciro, I'm sure you'll find it.
She pops up all over the place.
That's right.
Toronto, we go. International line. Rob, go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
I've got a question or actually a comment and a question, and maybe a request for you if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
For a long time, I've been an out-of-the-box thinker, and I think this helps me to connect the dots. Shortly after being on a coast-to-coast show as a caller, I've been listening for a long time, it was a show about new technologies and stuff. I experienced a scab on my belly button, and it troubled me for a while, and I've never really thought again about it other than on and off. But it just recently occurred to me that I've wondered if Melinda might have any situations where this would relate to a medical condition or something comparable like that. Blood in the stool or something like that. And I'll listen to her answer off the air. And I just wondered, George, while she was answering me, if you would mind trying to remote view me and see if you can see the surroundings I see. I'll I'll take your answers off the air. Thank
okay.
you.
I can't remote for you because I have to get myself in that state of mind, but go ahead and see if you can help him out.
You know, I'm sorry. I'm not a medical person. I'm not a doctor or even a CNA or anything. I don't have any medical knowledge. I recommend asking a doctor, going to a walk-in clinic, you know, that kind of thing, asking them. You know, certainly marks on the belly button are common in abductions, but I have nothing else to go on to suggest that you've had that kind of experience. And I would never do such a thing without hearing a bunch more, like the last lady who called. I recommend seeking out someone with medical knowledge, a doctor, and asking them.
That's probably the best advice you can give, Melinda.
Yeah, it's the only advice I can give.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you get a lot of people come to you, or do you have to go find them?
Oh, no. They're referred to me by other researchers and other abductees. I've only worked with about 50 cases. I'm a specific rehab, you know, involvement. I'm probably, you know, familiar with a couple hundred more cases that I'm just aware of. But when I say I've worked with them, it means I've done kind of a formal interview with them. And certainly I'm aware of a number of, you know, books and stuff and people that I have every intention on eventually doing a formal interview with. I just haven't yet. But, yeah, you know, they're mostly people are referred to me, you know, or people come up to me at conferences if I'm speaking at an event. I've met a lot of great cases that way.
Great. Well, we're going to come right back and take final phone calls with you, Melinda, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Melinda Leslie, and your phone calls. Melinda, give me the most fascinating case you have investigated.
Oh, goodness.
Always a curveball question.
Yeah, yeah. Right? I have to put some,
in the
put
wee
some
hours.
Thought into that one. Gosh, there's... I really would have to put some thought because one comes to mind, then another as far as the most fascinating.
In that case, let me make it even harder for you. Give me the second best.
Okay. But I'll tell you something that, like a subset of my own research that I'm doing right now, is, and I find it really fascinating, is individuals who, abductees, who join the military, you know, become involved in military service like yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And then have the re-abduction, you know, rehab, covert intelligence involvement in their experiences, but then have that experience while in the military. In other words, they're abducted by the military while in the military. And I have two tremendous cases I'm currently working with in depth in that regard, and I'm familiar with a bunch more. I actually think I've got about 8 or 9 that I'm aware of. A couple of them have written books in relationship to their experiences. The two I'm talking to haven't. One of them is working on a book. And they're just fascinating. One of them has gone public, so I can say her name, Niara Isley. While in the military, was used in an operation where she was sent out with, I think, like a radar truck with special high-tech kind of radar equipment on it for tracking. They were sent out to track what they thought were going to be some experimental aircraft. They tracked some UFOs. She thought they were tracking some things that may have been ours, but then they tracked some things that defied, you know, gravity and everything in such a way that she thought that they weren't ours. And in the midst of having that, she then had a significant period of missing time. I want to say it was like a week or something. I forget exactly how long, but some rather significant period of missing time. And then had a, you know, basic my lab experience, had an abduction by military personnel while from her military unit. You know, I'm not in her military unit, but she was taken from her unit, taken from the exercise she was on to be involved in this other thing. I have another case of a gentleman who had this happen as well. He was used in an exercise, and during that exercise involving the tracking or the monitoring of some UFOs. He then had a period of missing time in relationship to it, and another period of missing time, I believe, subsequent to it, and proceeded to have the re-abduction scenario as well. And this, you know, this it fascinates me. First off, these are really, really credible cases, and these people are so credible. And it's very difficult for them to say, you know, here I was in the military, and yet I was abused in this way. And they're really strong, and I they fascinate me.
Okay, back to the phones we go. Rockford, Illinois. Rory, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Rory.
Yeah, hey, George. How you doing?
Good. Thanks, Rory.
Can you hear me all right?
Yep, loud and clear.
All right, well, here's my case, or my story, George. One time about 9 years ago, I was up in northern Michigan, and I saw an object that I couldn't explain that can basically defy conventional physics, and I just, ever since then, I kind of went on a little bit of a quest to find out what it exactly was that I saw. And I presume that all my ends led to an organization called DARPA, which is Defense's Advanced Research Projects Agency, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a division of the DOD. And, you know, just some of the things that you were talking about black helicopters and dreams of being interrogated, let's say, mm-hmm. and having physical mutations on the body and things like that are all kind of things that, you know, I listen to anyway.
Yes.
You know, nothing that I would necessarily admit to. But, you know, I guess the question comes to, you know, trying to decipher out of the percentage of people that in the United States that see UFOs, you know, what percentage of these people aren't some self-induced psychosis or, you know, aren't people that are, you know, crazy. And how many people, you know, that have abductions are people that don't have mental stability issues and are actually being visited by people that want to find out information for, you know, reverse intelligence reasons,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that. And, there's just a lot of questions, I guess, that I have that maybe if I left my name and number, you could ask me, you know, some things that have happened in my life.
Sure.
Since I started on my quest for information to find out what it exactly was that I saw, because I know it wasn't, you know, solar flare gas.
Rory, is it right?
Yes.
Would you consider yourself an experiencer of this, or do you consider yourself an insider?
I guess at this point, I would have to say that you really don't know your reality.
Okay.
How's that for an answer?
Okay.
You know, and what
Rory,
you think,
would you email me?
What you think is a possibility of being real may not be real.
True. What's your email address?
My email. Oh goodness. I'm going to get bombarded.
Yes, you are. Hey, your website's already slammed.
It's on my website. But my email, besides you can get to it through my website, or I'll go ahead and say it's linnie@onebox.com. That's linnie@onebox.com.
All right. Let's take as many calls as we can. We've got more calls than time. We'll go to Detroit, old hometown, first-time caller. LaShawn, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, George. Hi, Melinda.
Hi.
How are you?
Real well. Thanks.
Good. Well, I've had several experiences with this. I was coming home from work and I heard this show, and I've had some really, well, I can tell you some stories. And a friend of mine also, he came home one day. You know, we had so many conversations about this, and we felt like our phones were being tapped. It was myself and my friend Donna. And one day he came home and he waited a long time to tell me. I said, Leon, why didn't you tell me? And I had the same situation happen to me. He said he came home, and this guy was staring at him, and he was up on the pole. And, you know, he said he's supposed to be up there working and fixing a line. He said the guy just kept staring at me.
Hmm.
And he said I was wondering what was he looking at. Well, I had a similar experience. I was at my mom's, and someone from the phone company pulled into my mother's driveway. When she got home, she was upset. So my neighbor and her daughter is outside. And I said, did you call up a phone service? She said, no. So the neighbor across the street, he says, I said, did you call up a phone service? He said, no, I didn't. He said, but they came out here, and he said, I had to run them out of here. He said, I did not call up a phone service, and they kept coming over here. And I'm going, oh, my God, you know, I'm thinking maybe it was all my fault because of these conversations that we would have. And, you know, with tapping the phone.
Do you feel you're an alien abductee?
I know I'm an alien abductee.
Okay.
I don't feel I know I am.
Okay, gotcha. Got it. Okay.
I've had some experiences in talking about it and dealing with, you know, these people coming out, you know, doing something to the lines and no one called for service. And, you know, it was in the summertime. And my mother came home and she was upset because he pulled in the back in the driveway and was in my neighbor's yard and messing with her line. And she said she didn't call for service and her phone was okay. And my neighbor across the street said the same thing. And I said, oh, my God, I'm thinking to myself, this is all my fault, you know. But I didn't say anything to my mother about it, you know. I didn't say anything to her about it. But one of the first experiences I had, I got extremely tired. And I said, why am I tired all of a sudden? So I went and I lay down. My mom was across the hall from me watching TV. All of a sudden, the whole room starts vibrating. And I'm going, what is going on? The whole room is shaking. And I'm pulled up real fast. And I'm spinning. I realized, okay, where am I? And so I saw this whiting on the wall, this odd whiting. And now I do that. Sometimes I get the urge to do this writing. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw these two beings or entities, and they were very, very bright. They looked like light bulbs. And I'm going, and I'm moving fast, and I see them. And then they bring me down, and I'm just sort of floating in the air. And I'm in this room, like we've got a lot of computers in the room, and I see two people, and I'm trying to hide because I'm like, they're going to see me. But they didn't see me, but I could see them. And so they pull me back up, and then I'm back in my room. The first time it happened, I pulled myself out of it, and I got up and got a glass of water, and I went back to bed, and then this time I couldn't pull myself out of it. And I'm going, like, when I got up, I said, this is my mother. You know, so I go into her room and she's still watching TV. She didn't notice anything. I'm thinking maybe, you know, she's going to say something to me like, what are you doing over there? And I said, oh, my God. And I called my friend Leon and told him about it. And then I had an experience with the Grays. Now, the Grays are telepathic. They can speak to you, you know, telepathically. Now, they told me, I was just, you know, kind of terrified, but before it happened, I was like out in space, and I saw this green light around me. And I knew at that moment I was okay. And so then they appeared. They took me back to their planet. It was completely destroyed and from war. And
so they have war too, huh?
Yeah. It was just this destruction, and there were only a few survivors. And as I'm on their planet, I see a ship fly over my head, you know. And I'm going, okay, I'm not on Earth anymore. This is not Earth, you know.
Yeah.
So they take me into this warehouse, and it all happened so fast. And so there were a group of them, and they had these beautiful green eyes, and they were looking at me very, you know, very intense. And they were in a circle, and I was inside of the circle, and they turned me around so I could see all of them. And I'm going, oh, my God, what's going on? And they gave me a message. So when I woke up, that was like the first thing on my mind, you know. And their thing was is to not let this happen to your planet. So now they've come to this war and it's total destruction. Now they're trying to rebuild. And that was the message. Don't let this happen to your planet. And please don't forget us.
Yeah.
No, how can I forget you? I can't forget that experience.
Well, that fits what I was saying much earlier in the program, George, about people getting environmental concerns and planet catastrophe stuff, and a lot of abductees get those kind of messages and feel very strongly that way. Will you, if you'll do me a favor, on the website is the list of 65 Are You an Alien Abductee questions.
Okay.
Which you can get to through alienexperiences.com / Melinda Leslie, or go to alienexperiences.com and there's a link to it on there. And then on my site, alienexperiences.com/ Melinda Leslie, there's the list of 20 traits if somebody's had a military abduction. I'd be curious what your responses are to both those lists. And so you can look at both those lists and email me.
All right, very good. Let's take a few more calls, and that's it. Joshua in Wabash, Indiana, you're up with us. Hey, Josh.
How you doing today?
Good.
First-time caller, actually. I have a really interesting question. Actually, it's two questions. I'll make it real quick here. First off, do you get a lot of questions in regards to alien abductees and how it affects their, I'd say, their religious beliefs, and specifically Christianity?
Sure. It's always, you know, for many people, it's a part of the discussion.
Is it profound for people, Melinda?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, people, you know, even if with myself, you know, when I first had the experiences, I was brought up very Catholic and have added to that. So now I consider myself still Catholic, but more spiritual. I have a, you know, greater spiritual understanding. And that has also helped me. You know, it's for a lot of abductees, having that spiritual background, it can help them cope with what's happening to them and heal and recover. And so, you know, it's something that people should use. But it does make you confront your beliefs. You know, well, what do I believe and why? And you know, where do we come from? And what is our connection to this? And what does it mean that other beings exist out there? Whether they're on other planets or another dimension or, you know, I can't say for sure where they come from, but you know, it does. It makes you have to examine your beliefs very strongly.
Right, and that's exactly what I did. And I had no answer to it until I met a man named Bill Schneblin. I don't know if you met him or not, or heard of him. But
no.
He has a very interesting experiences, and it's very in depth and well documented. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting how he put it that. Basically, his theory that aliens are basically demons,
mm-hmm.
and this whole genetic thing, and this whole the whole about hybrids and everything like that is the idea from a biblical standpoint that since Satan can't do anything and he knows his end, that by tainting the bloodline of humans, the salvation of Christ will no longer apply.
There are some people who believe that in a very strong way,
Melinda. I know that. I disagree, but they're welcome to their beliefs, and it's I don't share that understanding.
I almost had Travis Walton on with you and Whitley today. Travis, of course, mm-hmm. Fire in the Sky, the logger who was abducted with an incredible story, passed a couple lie detector tests in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable story, isn't it?
Oh yeah, Travis is amazing.
So, Melinda, we only got a couple minutes left. Let's squeeze in one more caller if we can. Let's go to Kokomo, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Steve, really fast. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Hi, Melinda. I'm glad I got in. First of all, my wife and I, we don't drink or do drugs. And, you know, Kokomo,
got the hum.
Right. There's been some strange things going on around here. You know.
Yep.
We had the hum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, then we had a boom. Then, like, a couple of days after that, we had, like, an earthquake. Everybody felt that. Okay, so Sunday, I was outside. It was shortly after midnight. And I'm real nervous. And I'm so really glad I got in because I just...
Yeah, but you know what? We're going to run out of time. I got less than a minute for you. You know
what? Okay, we saw an orange orb. And I ran in the house, got my wife. She saw it. We have no idea what it was. And I'm really...
Do you have missing time?
Well, I checked my watch shortly after, and it was like quarter after midnight. And as far as I know, there was no missing time. But can I expect something to go on?
No. Lots of people have sightings, and it doesn't mean you're going to have an abduction. So just because you're having sightings does not mean an abduction is going to happen.
No.
If you had had a significant period of missing time with that sighting and had bruises afterwards, well, then we'd be having a different discussion.
That's right, and radiation burns and everything else.
You know,
Melinda, thank you so much for being on the program. Your website getting slammed right now, but you're linked up at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.